Hello, everyone. Welcome to Prospect House, Sergeant Towers, Michael Bailey, Paddy Devitt here, fresh from Colney, as always. You kind of know the drill by now. Ahead of a Norwich City trip to Reading, which is, of course, before the international break, the second of the season. We got to speak to Daniel Farker and Tim Closer over lunchtime, which is always, it's always very engaging listening to Tim Closer speak, and we'll get into that, I'm sure. But I guess, first of all, we should probably talk about Josh Murphy, because it feels like it's the big story that's come out to a degree. I don't think it's all completely come out, really, but certainly in terms of...
What do you mean by that, Michael?
Well, as in, we don't really know why he hasn't played, or he didn't play on Tuesday, other than it was unprofessional build-up. We don't know the full details, do we? Do you?
Well, his preparation wasn't what it needed to be. I don't know. I don't mean that maybe conveys it might be something more to it than that. I don't think it is. I think it's simply a case of his attitude wasn't right. He wasn't working to 100% attitude, 100% preparation. And if you're not doing that under this head coach, you won't play. I don't think there's anything more to it than that.
Cool. Okay. Well, what we did have is Tim Closer and Daniel Farker both talking about it today and expanding on the point, I guess. And I think we both touched on it, didn't we, after Colney, echoes of what Daniel had to deal with Nelson earlier in the season, and how he was talking about the team. And we had a lot of people talking about the team today, didn't we? A lot.
The boat. The boat with everybody on it. And, quote, Tim Closer, Josh had fallen overboard and was pulled back on. So
maybe that was what happened.
maybe literally rather than metaphorically, yeah. I said that. I thought it was, in terms of how he went on to break it down, Daniel Farker, it was Oliveira again post Fulham. The message being nobody's bigger than the club, no name, no reputation, however talented, if you're talking about young players, they are, however much they could potentially be the future of the club. Farker talking about specific to Josh Murphy, there's a guy who's got all the potential in the world, can be anything he wants to be in the game, but the key factor for me was he's not 18 now, he's 22. These are absolutely critical years in his career, and if his attitude isn't right and he's not putting his everything he can into his career and maximising the gifts he's been bestowed, then he might look back and regret it in years to come. So it's a bit of tough love there. As Farker said, the short term thing could have been we needed him in terms of offensive options at Middlesbrough, you play the guy. But Farker felt longer term he's going to learn a lot more from basically being left out, and also to a degree publicly being, you know, put out there as why he was left out. There was no previous managers, other managers might have captured it in terms of an injury or, you know, an illness or whatever. There was none of that. I think I'll take your point, Farker hasn't maybe told us exactly chapter and verse, but he's told us enough to know that the guy wasn't hitting what he needed to hit to be in this man's plans. And that was the same with Oliveira quite clearly was put in his place, and he apologised, brought back into the fold, and it'll be the same with Josh. You know, he's obviously apologised on Wednesday apparently to both Farker and the group, and that's, in Farker's words, case closed and we move on. He's in the squad for Reading. But yeah, it's another reminder really, if either the players or supporters needed reminding, that under this guy, if he feels you're not putting it in, then you won't be involved, and it doesn't matter how good you are or how important you could be to the group.
And it was interesting that I think Daniel Farker took a bit of pleasure in the fact that the group almost policed this to a degree and the way they dealt with it. But also Tim Closer touched on that. You know, Tim was the one who kind of offered it up, as we spoke to him before, Daniel, in the way that the group had come around and helped Josh out. And that's ideal, isn't it? Because the last thing you want is something like this happening and the players fracturing a little bit, or, you know, some understanding thing where, you know, something you could maybe mitigate it and then other things carry through. And it generally seems that togetherness has helped repair the situation.
Yeah, and I think what you're alluding to there in that specific incident is kind of what we've seen in terms of on the pitch and the transformation.
Yeah.
Farker himself said, I think, after Borough, look, as coaches, we can give them the plans, we can tell them the tactical nuances, what to look out for in certain opponents, where we can be strong, but ultimately they cross the white line. Those players have to have that individual responsibility and collective will to carry out the plan, and fair play to them. Every game really since Millwall, they have done that, and that, I think, it comes from people like Closer, people like Ivo Pinto standing up and being really strong within the leadership group, and almost managing themselves to a degree, and to bring it back to Josh, bringing anybody who maybe strays off the path back into line, rather than it all has to come from the head coach, because you want that individual responsibility. Because as we saw Tuesday night, when you've got a hostile crowd, you've got an expensive array of talent coming at you, and you feel like a long way from home, it's no good looking over to your head coach there stood in the technical area. It needs to come from those players. And we've seen that on the pitch, and maybe we've seen that this week from what Close has said off the pitch as well.
It did come up at Colney in conversation that maybe Daniel was quite open about it, and almost too open about the situation. It should have been kept a bit more behind closed doors. But do you agree with that? I'm kind of more akin of having it open. I think because everything's kind of resolved and it seems to have been used as a positive experience, I don't necessarily see an issue with it being out in the open. But some people may think
Well, it goes back to what I just said. I mean, some managers wouldn't have heard any of this, and it would have been a mystery ailment or an injury why Josh wasn't involved, and now he is this week. But maybe it's the nature of the world we live in now that it's very difficult to keep these things in-house with social media and so many other avenues for news to leak out. You see, whenever there's transfer windows, I can't remember the last transfer that came out that we didn't know about, or, you know, we didn't get an inkling before it was officially announced, and that's the world we live in. So there may be an element of that, but I think there's also an element with Farker of, look, I'm not going to protect you. You know, he has to learn, and if that's part of the learning process, that he is going to be subjected to the likes of us supporters now realising that he wasn't as professional as he needed to be, then as long as he takes that in a positive way, and any time I've ever spoken to Josh Murphy, he strikes me as a very grounded individual who wouldn't take that as some sort of slight and then down tools. I think he will use that as a learning curve, and he will be better for it. And I think within the group as well, what it does clearly again reiterates that Farker is, his authority is unquestioned at the minute, and the results are now backing him up, because clearly when, you know, you're losing at Villa in such a graphic manner, then you go to Millwall, it's even worse. That undermines the manager and what he's trying to do. But, you know, fair play to him. He was brave in the Oliveira scenario, and I think he's been good on this one as well. And he reiterated as well, again, I mean, the quotes are up now. They're on our website, pinken.com, that, you know, for all the negative elements to this episode, he was also quite keen to stress the positive, that this is a very talented, excellent character, really good lad, big part of the future, can be anything he wants to be in the game, but this is obviously, you know, an episode he has to learn from, and if he does, then he'll be a better player for it.
Yeah, spot on indeed. I'd like to say that's the end of the matter and we'll draw a line on it, but I'm kind of hoping he'll come back, start on Saturday and score a hat-trick, and then we'll all get to talk about it again a little bit. We'll see how it pans out, but we are expecting him fully involved and back in.
Oh, he's in the squad, so. I'm not sure he'll be fast-tracked straight into the 11. I think there might be still a bit more of his lesson to learn, but he's certainly in the party, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Who isn't? We had a little bit of an injury bulletin, didn't we? And it was quite a long one again, but there's a lot of detail in there. Marco Stieperman, sounds like the fact that he came on Tuesday night didn't really do him any favours, so he's he won't feature at all at the weekend, primarily because he's become a dad, I guess, for the first time. I'm not entirely sure, but Steeper boy has arrived, and as you pointed out, might be able to play for England.
Yeah, why not? You know, we need all the help we can get. Germany have got a lot of good players, they don't need another one, so
no.
Roll on another 20 years maybe.
I think Marco will be a bit of a miss though, because I think he's really kicked on in the last few weeks and looked really impressive when he's played.
That said, I thought Husband did good midweek. Difficult assignment against the like of Adama Traore, and Marley Watkins was good as well in front of him, so yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously we'll get into the actual who's available, who's not, but I don't see him straying too far away from that Middlesbrough 11 when all said and done, particularly as Oliveira, it sounds like, isn't going to be available to start again.
No, indeed. Mainly, this is a bit of a worry, isn't it, this groin injury, because it's been around kind of all season. Memory has me thinking that it was a bit around, there was a bit of it last season, but I'm not entirely sure. So I guess the last thing you want to do is have to have an operation to sort it if that's what's required. But there's clearly a lot of conversation going on. It's going to have to be managed in the short term.
Well, the fact it's reoccurring, I mean, when he said that, the manager today, my mind went back to Michael Owen, who was always blighted with hamstring injuries, and, you know, they're always going to reoccur if there's a weakness there, or it sounds like it's something sort of in terms of the sports science medical department they need to get to the bottom of, because if there's a susceptibility there and a weakness there, then unfortunately because he's an explosive type of player as well, I think that's only going to accentuate any underlying issue. So Farker certainly hopes that over these next 2 weeks they can maybe medically get to the bottom of it, and then you would think it's kind of the different types of strength and conditioning he does, the different types of training to build up a resistance so that you're less susceptible to it, because there's no doubt he would be a key player moving forward. You throw Alex Pritchard in the mix as well, particularly obviously as the focus now is on top end of the pitch, because the defensive side looks so solid and so resolute that inevitably you're going to now focus on the top end, and he would be a big part of that. So it is a concern, but what can you do for this game? He's not going to be available to start. They've trained this morning, and apparently he had a long chat with the player after training, and Nelson's still reporting pain in his groin, in his body. So if the guy isn't feeling physically able to contribute, then I think it's probably going to be limited to a cameo again tomorrow, 10 or 15 minutes at most.
I get, memory serves, everyone else was pretty much okay, although I'm sure you'll remember better than me, Paddy, apart from Stephen Naismith is the one.
No Vrančić still. No Vrančić. He's not trained on this week. So he's unavailable. Naismith and Martin, it sounds like, is the back. Talking about reoccurring issues, apparently he's troubled with a back in the last couple of days that he's had from time to time, so he's not under consideration for this weekend. And Naismith, having had this abductor problem, he's gone back into training this week, and possibly might have tweaked something ankle ligament wise, so they need to get a scan done on it. It's certainly going to be the duration of the international break, but if the scan comes back and it's not great news, it could be longer. So on the personal level for that lad, he's just not got going at all this season, has he, really?
No, which is a real shame, given I think he himself was desperate to make up for things, I suppose, this season. It's just not happening. Let's have a look at some questions, shall we? I hope you can hear us properly, because some people say they can't quite hear us. We're trying to talk loudly. There's a lot of people working behind us. Let's have a look at Stuart Cousins. Does the club need outside investment now, as it looks like that's the way all teams are going? God, that's a nice all-encompassing massive question. What do you reckon, Pad?
Outside investment, you mean somebody with deeper pockets than the current owners, I guess.
Which I guess it ties into Reading, doesn't it? Because they have owners who
not
have,
doing them a great deal
well,
of help.
Well, they've
them
said in. They've got a lot of money, and they've spent a little bit, but I don't know if they spent what the fans maybe felt was going to be coming their way. And there's a few issues there.
Look at the team they played midweek. Look at the talent they had, in reserve in the team, not in the squad. Millions and millions of pounds worth of talent, and it's not quite clicking for them at the minute. I mean, ultimately, you look at any division, and in English football I'm talking about, and the clubs at the top end tend to be the ones with deeper resources, bigger wage bills, able to pay bigger fees. So there clearly is. There is a correlation between the amount of money you've got available, but irrespective of how much you've got available, you've still got to be able to spend it wisely. And I think most would agree in recent times Norwich haven't done that, because they did have money available, not maybe from ownership sources in parallel with the likes of Middlesbrough or whatever, but certainly in terms of Premier League revenue, and they didn't spend it wisely enough. And why can we say that? Because they're back in the Championship. So it's one thing to have the revenue, it's a second thing to be able to maximise it.
And I get the impression that a lot of the changes that have taken place at Carrow Road with Stuart Webber and the different model of players they're recruiting and wage structure and all this sort of stuff, and players that they will have a value that they can make from afterwards, whatever happens, is about making more of the money they have got available. And then we'll figure out if that's enough or not. So thanks for the question, Stuart. Let's have another one. James Messenger, hello there, James. Do you think Daniel Farke is simply waiting for us to concede a goal before he can justify bringing Hanley into the starting 11, or is Hanley currently backup?
He is currently backup because he's not starting him.
No.
So he's answered his own question there. It's a difficult, well, it's a nice problem, but it's also a difficult one, because he basically left Newcastle because he wanted to play regular football, and for the time being, he's certainly not getting that here. But I would get the impression Grant Hanley could see that there's lads ahead of him who are keeping clean sheets, so how could he justifiably think that he should be elbowing out Closer or Zimmerman, for example? I think that's a nice situation to be in, because you can guarantee Tim Close and Christoph Zimmerman will not play every single minute of Championship football from this point onwards. So we said we were crying out for reinforcements in that area of the pitch. They've got him at the minute, and as long as Farker can manage the situation right to bring it full circle to where we started this debate, and he's shown himself so far to be able to handle these issues, that's another one for him on a management level, then yeah, fine, it's a nice problem to have, isn't it?
I think people were thinking that the experience of Hanley would be there to improve Norwich on the pitch. What it seems to have done is just been brought into the squad to help raise everyone's level who is actually playing on the pitch. But we'll see Grant, I'm sure, quickly enough. Andy Lazel, can you get me a ticket for the Arsenal game, please? He says the club messed up with allocation, which is, of course, a strong discussion point. Sadly, Andy, we haven't got tickets for the Arsenal game, I'm afraid. Everyone got there before us. Reading, Daniel Farke was interesting on them. I thought he, conceded they're struggling, I think he talked about their quality that they've got and what they're trying to do. And I think he quite liked the fact that Yep Stam called his side physical.
He did.
So, what are you expecting from? What did you get from what Daniel was saying about Reading?
I didn't quite chime with me when he was saying that they were one of the top sides for him and they had some really really good players. I don't quite see them in that bracket, despite them, for me, overachieving last season to get to the playoff final. But I suppose if you're a Reading fan, because by all accounts he's come under a little bit of pressure there, Yap Stam, because of this one win in eight, I think it is the current run of form, that unfortunately does raise expectations when you get literally to the final step in the Premier League, is so tantalisingly close, and then you fall short. And as I said to Farker, maybe there's a little bit of a hangover there still. And Stam, worth remembering, this is his first managerial posting. His career coaching wise to date had been as part of the Ajax coaching team, so he's probably learning now elements of the job that he didn't have to comprehend last season, when everything seemed to be flowing in the same direction, in the positive upward curve. So it just looks to me as if they are struggling a little bit for confidence. You can see that midweek. They got a Millwall, they're 1-0 up, and they can see two goals in the 83rd and 85th minutes. That to me would be a worry if you have a Reading persuasion, because it sort of smacks of a group of players who do feel a bit brittle and a bit fragile. But great from Norwich's perspective that if they go there and are as resolute at the back as they have been and get their noses in front as they have done at Borough and Sheffield United and Brentford, you could see that crowd turning. And I think it's an absolutely brilliant time to go to Reading, because it's not traditionally been a great hunting ground in recent times. And if they could go there and get a positive result, ideally a win, bounce into the international break, everything then is really, it's almost set for liftoff, isn't it?
It is indeed. The game is live on Sky, so it's a 5:30 kickoff, but that obviously doesn't preclude you from joining our live coverage at pink.com as well, and then you can get our objective view of everything going on too. Tim Close obviously got asked about the clean sheet record, which he's been such a big part of. He's yet to experience conceding a goal this season, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
He didn't necessarily say it couldn't just roll on and on. Also, he seemed quite happy that run could carry on, and he's been such a big part of it, hasn't he? So you can sense his role in all that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, it's not a coincidence that he comes back into the side and they look far more solid. Zimmerman looks a far better player alongside him, and everything's just knitted together. Sometimes it is one piece of the jigsaw, isn't it? But yeah, I like it. I liked his tone again today. There was no kind of sense of resting on laurels, and as he said, it proud to be part of a little bit of club history there. But why not stretch it further? Don't settle for five clean sheets in the league. Let's see if we can make it six tomorrow. And as I say, just push it on again, because it is now getting to the stage where you can see that the sights can be raised. There was inevitably, when particularly results and performances were so patchy early on in the season, you're not quite sure where to set the measure for Norwich's season in terms of their ambitions. But they get a positive result tomorrow, then they're bang in it, because I think they'll be on the fringes of the top six then going into the international break. And you look at the teams that have gone to then, Reading away, Sheffield United away, Middlesbrough away, all, maybe not in Sheffield United's case, you would expect to be up there, but certainly the way Sheffield have started this season now, one of the better teams in the Championship. And to go to three tough away grounds like that and come away unbeaten, it's a massive statement of intent for me.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed. Chris Jennings poses the question, the problem will be if we do concede, can we score two in a game to win?
We'll find out.
I guess there's an element of the fact they haven't needed to so far, and whether they would open up a little bit if they had to chase it. I don't know. There's lots of dynamics that we haven't seen even now, isn't there? But at least the current dynamic is working, which certainly helps. Any other team? Are you kind of expecting them to line up pretty similar to how they did on Tuesday night then, would you say? Are there any sort of changes you're expecting?
I couldn't see it. I think it'd be as much as it, I mean, as I say, the vast majority of those players now have 2 weeks without a game, excluding the international boys. So in terms of, as he was doing with Tete there earlier in the week, managing bodies, managing workload, I think you go full tilt tomorrow, knowing that for the vast majority of them lads, they've got 2 weeks to recover at Colney. So, yeah, and they're going to be that group of players, as you saw by the scenes on the final whistle, that huddle at Middlesbrough, they will be so full of confidence, that so much togetherness and team spirit has been fostered there. Go again, lads, would be the message, particularly if, obviously, you know, as we've said, Oliveira isn't quite at a level where he can come into the 11. You're not having Stieperman, Vrancic, so his room for manoeuvre is a little bit limited. But really, if I was to see that 11 on the team sheet tomorrow at 4:30 when the teams drop, I don't think I'd be too unhappy.
4:30 for the teams drop. That's a bit weird, isn't it? Lovely. Cheers, Pad. I think we'll wrap it up then. Thanks all for your questions and for watching. Don't forget, we'll be sending the coaches off in our customary style at about 11:30, I think it is, in the morning, something like that. So keep an eye on the Pinkham Facebook page and we'll see you there, and we'll bring you all the live updates over the course of events at the Medeski Stadium as well. Until then, have a lovely time of it. Cheerio.